Welcome to Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and beer makes everything better. This week, we're talking about Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
And we're the Drunk Guys. So let's get right into it. The book is, if you have not heard of it, vaguely successful young adult novel.
Moderately successful,
Moderately successful. It's in its like 4 billionth printing. It is the story of Harry Potter, who is a young English boy who has been raised living with his aunt and uncle because his parents died, and to his knowledge, they died, I believe, you know, some sort of accident, like a car accident or something like that. He has been raised and has been treated like crap by them, and finds out that he is actually a wizard, and that there is this other world of wizards that exists parallel to the non-magical world, that the magical people kind of conceal and the non-magical people either choose to ignore or are just too dopey to see. But he actually belongs in that world. His parents were wizards and they were not killed in an accident. They were murdered by the most evil wizard who had ever lived, who had tried to kill Harry himself.
He who shall not be named.
Yes, he who shall not be named, who had tried to kill Harry, but because of something that Harry doesn't understand and nobody else quite understands, Harry survived, and the spell that he who shall not be named, Voldemort, cast, rebounded, and conceivably killed Voldemort.
Instead.
And Harry has now found out about this, and he is going to attend Hogwarts, the most prestigious wizarding school in Great Britain.
In the world.
Really? Yeah. Right, we find out about some other schools later in the series, but it is the Harvard of wizard prep schools, or the Eton, or whatever the appropriate one would be. He goes to school, makes some friends with other wizards, makes some enemies with other wizards. He is a celebrity in the wizard world because he is the boy who lived, and everybody knew about Voldemort, and their parents knew about it, and many of them, their parents were killed or tortured or interact with them, so they know all about it, and Harry's a celebrity. And of course, as young adult fiction goes, Harry gets involved in other hijinks and sort of coming of age things, but then also in the rise or the attempted return of Voldemort throughout the book. I think covers it.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's time. Let's crack open a beer. What do you want to start with here?
We'll start with this one.
Yeah.
All right. So the beer I brought this time is from Flying Dog Brewery, and it's called Bloodline, because who your parents are in this book, really important, who you're related to, whether you are a full-blood wizard or whether you are part muggle or whether you're all muggle, is a really important thing for everybody that knows about wizards, at least. It's from Flying Dog Brewery. It's called Bloodline. It's because it's made with blood oranges.
Yeah, blood orange puree. It is 7% alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Smells like fucking orange.
Definitely smells like orange.
Kind of crisp. That's something.
It's not a strong orange flavor.
No, I think you smell it more than you taste it.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, though.
It's good. I would drink more.
Yeah, I would drink that.
I'd drink more.
Well, yeah. So race in the wizard world is interesting, right?
Uh-huh.
They're, you know, the villain. There are kind of several villains in the story, and different types of
different
villains.
Levels.
So Voldemort is the bad guy, of course. But then there are like the mean teacher of Professor Snape, and then there's the prick kid of Draco Malfoy, who is like everything you don't like in a rich kid. He is from this long-established wizard family that has vague, perhaps, ties to Voldemort. They pride themselves on being full-blooded wizards.
And he's also just snotty and entitled the whole time and is just, you know, such an asshole. You can't help but hate him.
Yeah, he blows. He blows the big one. And he insults, at one point, Hermione, Harry's new friend, the brains, the smart girl, by calling her a mudblood, which is like the ultimate insult in the wizarding world because she is from a non-magical family. And, you know, it's, I don't know, you could pick your own word that you think is appropriate that this leads to immediate fisticuffs that Ron has to take a swing.
Mm-hmm.
Ron is the other friend that they make in their little merry trio. Ron being, if Hermione's the brains, Ron is the fucking dopiest character. And Ron swings at Malfoy because of the thing he says. What a awful, offensive term to use. Mm-hmm. So bloodline is appropriate.
Totally.
Sucks balls. So, what's your experience with the book?
So, I'm weird in that I actually didn't read the Harry Potter series till about 2 years ago. This was out. So, I just missed. I was only a little bit too old for Harry Potter when it became really big. I mean, I think I was in ninth grade when it first came out, which for this very first book, the one we're talking about, is a little bit, you know, is a little bit old. So I wasn't into it. And then when it got really popular, I decided to be the cool kid and not read it because everybody else was into it. And you know what? I don't know if that was the right decision or not, but, you know, about 2 years ago, I decided, hey, you know what? Everybody else knows about this. I'm sure it's fine. So I decided to read them, and they were good. I liked it. So, Mike, how about you?
Well, I did almost the exact opposite of what you did. So I'm a little bit younger. So when I was in sixth or seventh grade was when I started hearing about the Harry Potter books. And in fact, I heard about it from people who were like, oh, there's this book called The Sorcerer's Stone by Harry Potter. I'm like, that's not how it works. But I remember somebody telling me that. And I'm like, okay, great. And I somehow got a copy of it. And at this point, the first three books were available. So maybe I wasn't the first on the bandwagon, but the first three books were available. I was in seventh grade. I read them and got immediately hooked. And then there were only three of the planned seven books out. So every 2 years, the next book came out, I would read that book. But I, you know, it's been 2 years, so I'd go back and often reread either the previous book or the entire series. So I've actually read Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone 4 times. And I've read Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, the British version, 1 time as well.
And how different was that?
It is almost exactly the same. The differences are purely in cultural things. So when Harry is playing Quidditch, in the American edition, they hold up a sign that says Potter for President. And the British edition says Potter for Prime Minister, which makes sense. Or they pull it the loo instead of the bathroom. And they wear a jumper instead of a sweater. Or trainers instead of sneakers. And they just kind of use those, or I don't know if there's any time that they take a lift or put things in a boot, but they just use British terms for things that an American audience wouldn't get.
Chips instead of French fries.
Yeah, that's about it. So other than that, it's pretty much the same book. It's exactly the same book, I should say. So I've read it 5 times total, and I've read the entire series, of course. I think I've read each book at least 2 times at this point besides that. So I'm pretty well versed in it. Grew up with the books. The last book came out, so if I started in seventh grade, the last book came out, I was halfway through college and got the Harry Potter book the first day it was out and stayed home and actually with my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, we just hung out and read Harry Potter. It was what every prepubescent boy dreams about. That's what it was. So I've read it a shit ton of times. So I've had a very different experience with it, which I think would give me a very different reaction to the book, emotional connection than you have. So this book is part of my childhood at this point.
Would you say these are the books that made you a reader?
They certainly helped. I think I was already a bit of a reader before Harry Potter, because what was really hip when I was in like third grade were Goosebumps.
Oh my god.
And I read a shit ton of Goosebumps. So I was already a bit of a reader, and I kind of became less of a reader as high school and college went on. I just kind of did schoolwork and didn't read for leisure. I read for just work. So this planted a seed and helped me to develop the interest. And if I had known, I won't say if there were, because I'm sure there are, but if I had known about other books in a similar vein to Harry Potter at the time, I'm sure I would have picked them up and tried to read them too, as I waited 2 years for every stupid book. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's a lot easier to find, not only because there are so many more books that are in the same vein of the fantasy world, many, many book series, so it definitely helped me become a reader. Well, how do you feel? I mean, you've read it as an adult. What do you think?
Right, so I might be the only one in the universe who... It was out when I was a kid, but I didn't read it, and then I read it as an adult. I mean, I liked them. I thought, you know, reading it after the hype was already over and all the movies had already been out. In fact, I think I ended up seeing most of the movies before I ever read any of the books. That was a little weird. I mean, there were times when I definitely knew what was going to happen. But, you know, I liked them. They were good. I think it still holds up, even though, you know, the first one is now 20 years old.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I think they still hold up, and they're still fun. They're fun for anybody to read.
So who do you think is the best kind of audience for this book? I mean, I think there's a target audience of the young adult reader, but clearly that's not the only person type of reader who's read the book.
You know, it's definitely a young adult book because it has those other things that young adult books have, where it's not just good versus evil, because that's a lot of different things, but it's like the most good, the most best good versus the most evil at the same time. And things are very black and white. And that, because I have read The Hunger Games, I've also read, it's you know, that's what these books kind of do. You know, it's not subtle in that way. You know, it's very good versus evil. It's also a protagonist who is a teenager or you know, a child or a teenager themselves. And they go through a lot of the things that teenagers go through. That's what also makes it a young adult book. But J.K. Rowling definitely threw in a lot of interesting things that you wouldn't even get as a 11 or 12-year-old. Some really, really clever wordplay things. And, you know, she's a classics major. There's a lot of Latin and Greek that she put in. And as an educated adult, you can find those things fun or interesting. And I never would have picked up on any of that when I was younger.
No, I didn't get... I thought I was a genius because I figured out the mirror of Erised before they tell you it in the book. When I was, you know,
freaking genius.
Like, this is, I figured that out. Oh, it's a mirror. It shows you what you want. Oh, Erised is desire backwards. And then later on, it tells you that explicitly, but I figured it out earlier and I thought I was clever. But the other things like Diagon Alley, I didn't really think about that, or spells being Latin words or Latin based on Latin roots. I didn't know any Latin to get that. Not that I know any Latin now, but I know enough to figure out when something's happening. So is it better to read as a young adult or is it better to read as an adult? An old adult?
Still better as a young adult, meaning a teenager. Still better as a young adult, but it's probably a fine... I mean, we just want teenagers to read. You know, it almost doesn't matter what you read. It's fine to read Harry Potter or The Hunger Games or any of those other, some of the worst quality, you know, young adult books. That's fine as long as you read. But, you know, when you're an adult, you know, if you read more than one book a year, read this and read something else.
It's true.
That's okay, too.
What's sad, and just make me think of it, how many people probably don't read one book a year. If you're not in the book industry or education, it is probably exceedingly rare for you to read more than a book or two a year.
Well, our president has boasted about never having read a book. Not even one. And not even Harry Potter.
And he's allegedly written a book. So that's amazing. That's quite an accomplishment.
Allegedly, yeah, right? Well, you see, he hasn't even read that book.
It's
so.
It's his second favorite book, which is amazing.
Yeah, behind the Bible. Yeah,
that's exactly. Amazing. You have two favorite books and you've read zero. That's literary alchemy. Making sense. Like the Sorcerer's Stone. Yeah. But I think the average adult, I mean, I have no statistics. I'm pulling this purely out of my ass, which is where everything I say comes out of. I bet the average adult does not read more than a book a year. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, Mark Zuckerberg he was going to read a book a month and he was going to post the title of the book and kind of make this reading list that people would want to read and follow along with. I bet he followed through and did the whole year, but that's 12 books in a year. And there are people I knew at the time who were like, wow, that's a lot of books he's going to be reading. That's a lot. Yeah, I'm not going to keep up with that. That's a book a month. That's reading a handful of pages a day. That's basically if you only read while you took a dump, you would read that. And then some. I don't want to brag. I don't want to big up our podcast. But Nate, how many books are you up to this year?
I'm up to 36 already. 36, 37. And it's only halfway through the year. Now, I know you're quite a bit further than me.
I am. I'm at 65, but I will admit that about 15 of those are graphic novels.
Right, so not real books.
They're not real. You know what, though? None of them were audiobooks.
Fuck you. So as you were just explaining that, I just looked up, you know, the very first thing I could find on the internet about how many books does the average person read. So women tend to read more than men. About 77% of American women read a book in 2015, compared to 67% for American guys. That's read a book. That's a book, singular book. I mean, some of them presumably read more than one, but you know.
You know, this is what it feels like to be in the 1%.
Right, we just are.
1% of what is important?
Yeah, 1%.
So
1% of Harry Potter nerds.
That's so. You know what? We are not even close to the top 1% of Harry Potter nerds. Because I don't have the fucking... I know people who have the Deathly Hallows tattooed on their body. Oh, I've met these people. I've seen them. I've just talked to them. And not vomited. Like, that's a real thing. There are fans who are obsessed. When I was on a vacation, I was on a cruise, and they had, like, little trivia things. They had Harry Potter trivia. So I went.
Did you win?
No. Came in second. Because the tradition. Questions were, like, holy shit hard. Like, what were the four types of dragons in the Goblet of Fire Triwizard Tournament? Really? And you're like, oh, it's a Norwegian Ridgeback, or like, whatever the yeah. Some people knew that shit.
On the same boat as you.
Yeah. And if you've ever been on a cruise, I like going on cruises, but it's basically a floating nursing home. So it's the fact that there are that many youngish people, because the old people, they can't keep up. They're just busy doing shuffleboard and complaining about their hips. There were that many young people who were able to just summon this ridiculous Harry Potter trivia out of their fucking chasm and just, oh, of course it's, well, what, he grew up on whatever, number 4 Privet Lane or whatever the address is. They just know every detail about the books. And then the things in the film, that the question I lost on, because I make fun of these people, but I fucking knew a lot of these answers.
You're not bitter about this at all.
I'm not, because the prize was like a koozie. It was not really, it wasn't like a free cruise. And they're already feeding you to the point of trying to make foie gras out of you. Like, there's no point in giving any sort of dietary prize or and I had an all-inclusive drinks package because we're the drunk guys. I was going to drink my face off. The question I asked was, what castle was used for the external shots in the Harry Potter movie for Hogwarts? Like, who the fuck knows that?
Fuck that.
I heard the answer. I cannot tell you now. I don't want to tell you. Fuck that castle. I don't care. So, off of that tangent, if you have not read the book as a kid, if for whatever reason, maybe you were on a 20-year missionary quest in Bhutan, and you've not read Harry Potter, and you just come back and like, oh, this wildly fucking popular, it's part of cult, the American and English-speaking culture now, should you read it? If you're an adult, like, do you miss something is my point. Because the whole, when you're a kid and you read this, and you find out about this other world, and there's magic, and you don't necessarily believe it's real, but you buy into it very differently than mm-hmm. you do as a man who's 30 years old or whatever. So what do you think? Should you read it then?
Hard to say.
Is there
I mean, if you are not a reader and you want to just try something, yeah, sure. It's perfectly entertaining and fun and interesting, even as an adult.
And
go ahead, read.
And it is an easy read
yep,
for an adult.
Definitely.
I mean, it's meant for young adults, so it's not challenging. There are no words you're going to have to look up, probably. There is no dense, difficult passage. It's very descriptive. It just kind of tells a story.
Mm-hmm. And it's clever and funny. And each book is an interesting mystery.
Yeah.
You know, so it has that element of, well, let's find out what happened next and let's solve the mystery. And that's, by nature, always interesting.
It's true. That is true. That is a good point. Is there some reason why you shouldn't? Is it lame? Is it weird? Pedophile-y? Is there a reason why you shouldn't read it as an adult? I know, I think it'd be really weird if you're a 30-something-year-old man and you're wearing wizard robes and chasing children around with a wand. That's wrong. But reading the book, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't.
No. Of course, if you could only read one book, if you only have to, if you're so busy, you know, if you just spend so much time on Facebook that you only have time to read one book in a year, I don't think this is what I would pick either as an adult. But,
well, have you already read The Art of the Deal? That's the question.
You know
that
what?
That complicates your...
Well, when Trump reads Art of the Deal, I'll read Art of the Deal.
Going anti-Trump lately. Yeah. I don't want to... We're not super political on the Drunk Guys Book Club, but when there's low-hanging fruit, goddammit, we're going to reach for it.
Can't help it. Can't help it.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of question, when you phrase it that way, though, is there one... If you could only read one book, that's a fucking awful question. You know, that's the kind of thing you see in movie trailers. Like, if you only see one movie this year.
In a world.
Yeah. Right.
Where there's only one movie.
See this. And it's never in the trailer for a good film. It's never like, see Citizen Kane. Because it's like, no, go watch Alien 3. Oh, that's a piece of shit movie. Why did I watch that? Well, I only watched my movie I hit my quota. I can't watch anything until January now. So when you phrase it that way, if you could only read one book, sure, Harry Potter doesn't win, but that's because fucking nothing wins.
You couldn't possibly pick
because that. Even if you pick the best book you've ever read, like the most literarily brilliant book with beautiful writing and in an extremely engaging and creative plot and well-developed characters, you would not appreciate it if you have not read other books.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, not to say it's the greatest book I've ever read, but I think of something like Middlesex by Geoffrey Eugenides or The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. Two of the greatest books I've read. If I had not read a bunch of other books, I would not... I wouldn't see what made them great. And the things that they allude to, I would not get either. Even something like a classically great book, like Moby Dick, which I think is actually a really great book. You wouldn't have the stamina to read it. You wouldn't have the ability to read it unless you read something else. So Harry Potter might be a very good candidate, actually, now that I think about it, because you don't need to be a strong reader.
Mm-mm.
And you know what? I remember being extremely pleased with myself when I read this book as a seventh grader, because it's long, right? It's like it might be just under 300 pages. Or just over, actually. Full of shit. 309 pages.
Oh, my God.
That's a fucking long-ass book. That's like
You could barely count that high
at that age. I don't have enough toes, so I'd have to... I could count 21 very easily. And after that, things get hairy. But it is...
Well, non-seventh grade.
Non-seventh grade. No. So it is... That's a long book. And the series, they get longer and longer and longer. And we plan on doing episodes on the other books, where we'll talk more about those. But there's actually not a whole lot of depth in the first book to talk about. It's more it's a great gateway to this series. It is engaging. It's fun. And you get really into it. So if you haven't read it already, fucking read it. Because what the hell are you doing?
Right? Who are you? What planet are you on?
When did they start letting the Amish listen to podcasts? This is clearly, you are in the vast minority of people. You must have just come out of some Cold War air raid shelter that you've been hiding in. Everybody's read the book. If you haven't, you should. Not just because everybody has, not to use the bandwagon, but it's fun. And you know what? It's kind of like the same thing with Catcher in the Rye. Because other people have read it, because it's so popular.
You might as well.
Yeah, you're going to miss things. Now, it's not like we're telling you to go read Infinite Jest, because nobody fucking references Infinite Jest. And I would know, because I goddamn read it. And I've never once... I'm waiting for the day when someone makes an Infinite Jest joke. I'm like, aha, I get that. You're not smarter than me. I've read that fucking doorstopper. Not yet. Nor will I make that joke. I'm not that guy.
All right, what's that beer you have there?
Well, we got some more beers. Speaking of a lot of the things we're talking about, I want to say picking beers for this book was difficult. But I went on a theme picking off of the attitude and behaviors of a lot of characters, and I picked Stone, because it's the Sorcerer's Stone, which is a great brewery from California. Sublimely self-righteous ale, since most of the characters are pretty self-righteous. So, where's your cup?
That's good.
Ooh, this is an 8.7% alcohol beer. There's like a whole story on the back here. I didn't read it. I'm not gonna.
It was reading. There. Why the fuck would you do that?
Well, you know what, man. I have to say, as a big beer fan and as a home brewer now, I love the story on the bottle. I love when they're like, "Oh, this is a beer made with black currants and aged inside of a whiskey barrel for 6 months with coconut husks." Like, I like reading that. I find that interesting. And I'm like, "Ooh, that sounds really good." But this is like 4 paragraphs. So Stone, I'm sure it's very
that's almost a page.
Listen,
oh my God.
Bloodline, which I didn't actually, the more I drank of it, the less I liked it. Ale brewed of blood orange puree and natural flavorings. Okay, cool. I know what that's about.
End of period. End of story. Yeah.
Yeah. Though this, all right, so I don't know. This was an anniversary ale of theirs. I'm skimming. In 2007, and they rebrewed it. Sure, it could tell me like what kind of fucking hops it uses, but whatever. What do you think of it?
It's thick. That's my first... That's my first descriptive word.
I hear that one a lot. I don't. I'm looking it up because I have no idea what to make of this. Because with beer, it's one of those things, the more you know about beer, the more you kind of need to know about a beer to appreciate it. So this is what they are calling a black IPA, which is an interesting term, which is kind of a new genre of beer.
Mm-hmm.
I think... kind of invented just because every brewer and their mother has a fucking boner for hops, and every beer is just extremely hoppy. So they made these stouts. What this could have easily been a stout or a porter, but it's so hoppy that it doesn't really match the character of a stout or a porter anymore. And many other beers have done this. They're like, oh, that's actually, now it's a black IPA. That's a thing. It's just an IPA that's not pale. So, pale. So it's a black IPA. Is what Stone says on their website. It tells you it's 90 IBU. So this is a bitter fucker. It's good. It does not smell like an IPA.
IBUs?
Yeah. But you know what? Because it's so malty, because of the color and stuff, it kind of hides it a little bit.
It does.
It's okay. It's not spectacular, I have to say. I like Stone stuff. I love Arrogant Bastard, not just because they named it after me. I love the Old Guardian barley wine. The Russian Imperial Stout's really good. They have a lot of good beers. This one is not my favorite, but it's pretty good. It's pretty solid. So self-righteous characters in the book, right? If self-righteous, right? People who think they know better than everybody. Especially as the series goes on, there's a lot of characters.
Yeah.
Including Dumbledore himself, but Harry Potter, maybe not so much. But his shitty aunt and uncle.
Yeah. Draco Malfoy. Voldemort himself.
Absolutely. Snape. A lot of the characters are real egotistical d-bags who think they know what's best for everybody. And maybe that's everybody in every book to some degree, or every story. But it's almost frustrating to read as an adult how one-dimensional some of those characters are in there, and especially in this first book. They get better. As the story goes on, you find more out about them, mm-hmm. which makes them more interesting characters, which is one reason why I really liked rereading the books. You could pick up on all the stuff that's kind of breadcrumb trailed throughout the series that you know there's mm-hmm. information there. For example, in the second chapter of the book, Harry Potter talks to a snake, and it's just chalked up
at the zoo.
It's just a weird experience. Something strange happens and he magically makes some glass disappear. This is before he knows he's a wizard. That becomes an extremely important plot point, not only in the second, in the next book, when they revisit it, after you've basically forgotten about it, and then it comes back, which is really great planning on Rowling's part, to plan all these things out. Not only come up with these ideas, but to come up with them at the beginning. You know, I think that's a problem with a lot of these YA series. If somebody writes a book and they say, oh, but it could be a series and there'll be sequels and sequels and sequels. And then those sequels are in the same world and they add to it, but they feel like appendages. They don't feel like they're part of one long work. Whereas these books really do feel mm-hmm. connected. So kudos there. Is it a good book?
Is it a good book?
We've talked about what's a good book. Is it a good book?
All right. It's been a couple weeks since we talked about what makes a good book, but... So, all right, what the criteria we sort of laid out a couple weeks ago. A fun, interesting plot. A good, like, use of language. Makes you think. Would be number three. What does this book have?
Well, it's got the plot.
It definitely has an interesting plot, because it's, interesting. It's an interesting sort of premise. It's a mystery and makes you really want to know, like, what is, you know, why did this happen? What's going on? It definitely has that. In terms of use of language, there's some really like creative stuff about which we already talked about earlier in the podcast. I think those two things definitely make it good.
Right. You say use of language. It definitely uses language well, but differently than I think we were originally conceiving, right?
Yeah, also true.
Because I was thinking like, flowery, beautiful writing. This doesn't really have that. It's not poorly written. But it doesn't have any. There are very few lines from this book that I'm going to say, oh, that's one for the ages right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just in terms of this book's success, just in terms of, well, everybody else has read it, kind of makes it culturally important at the time, though also in a different way.
Right, because when we're thinking of Catcher in the Rye, Catcher in the Rye talks about what life was like in New York for a certain part of the population mm-hmm. in 1950. This is about a fictional world, so it's not culturally important that way, but it has shaped culture.
Yeah.
And it's changed the way that books are written and marketed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important from it, if you look at it in this sort of literature historical sense. Now, this is a turning point in young adult fiction.
For sure. This is the book that made young adult fiction into a thing.
Right, because there was children's books before, and there were things like Goosebumps and The Babysitter's Club and The Boxcar Children, like those kind of long, long, long series books where there was like 100 of them mm-hmm. that would come out on a monthly basis.
Yikes.
Yeah, they really did. It's unbelievable how mm-hmm. consistent those people were putting out those books. But those were never called like young adult literature to my understanding. Those were just chapter books or something like that.
Yeah.
This is not a chapter book. This really made that term stick. Now, I've had professors, now this is going back now a decade or so, who swore up and down that this was a terrible book for a variety of reasons. Now, I wasn't at like a conservative Christian college where they were saying that the witchcraft was bad for... They were saying it was a badly written book or a badly executed book. And I think that is just total horseshit.
I never had a professor talk about Harry Potter, but I did have a teacher in high school who was British who said to all of us that Harry Potter is just like real British boarding school, except for the magic. The magic part's not real, but everything else is just like real British boarding school, which definitely made it funny.
Speaking
I mean,
of boarding school, though, I'm going to open this our last beer here. This is from the beer cellar of Mike. This is Dogfish Head's Old School Barley Wine. 15% alcohol barley wine.
Oh, my God.
Brewed with figs and dates. I want to pour these out for us. Keep talking about your...
You know, it's the kind of thing where when it was really popular, when something becomes really popular, it also becomes cool to say, oh, no, that's bullshit. Oh, that's terrible. No, that's nonsense.
That's true.
You know, that's lowest common denominator. And I was one of those people because I refused to read it when it was popular. So, you know, I'm one of those people. But, you know, I read it after all of those, after that went away and, you know, Harry Potter was just a thing. I read it and it was still good.
There was actually in Chuck Klosterman's latest book, there's a piece about how he's never read Harry Potter and how he feels like he's missing out on a culturally important thing. Like, it's going to be kind of what we described. This beer is intense.
Whoa. What was the percent on this
15.
One?
15.
Yeah, you can tell. Holy crap.
It's actually, I'm not really, I usually like these intense kind of beers. This is a bit much.
Whew.
Yeah, let's get some heat on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get like a fruity toffee smell. Like green apple, though. It's like syrupy in body. It's so viscous. Then you taste... I don't know if I'm tasting figs and dates. That's really, it tastes more like raisins and apricots. But,
well, just, you know.
But it's some sort of, you know, dried fruit
mm-hmm.
taste. It's interesting. Probably not the best choice for August. But
when it's hot.
It is an interesting beer. Old school... the name apply, you know,
mm-hmm.
because that is exactly what Hogwarts is modeled after, the traditional British boarding school, which Nate's teacher confirmed is
just like that,
pretty dead on, minus the magic, and they had one giant on campus. Yeah, so, and I think the books are good literature by our standards. Who the fuck are we? Really drunk guys. But I think
mm-hmm.
in terms of being a, like, for me, I try not to use, is a book revered as a reason to read it. I mean, some, I certainly do choose that way, but I wouldn't necessarily not read a book because it's not considered great. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So this meets our standard. I think it's a great book. It's fun to read, and that's probably the most important quality you could look for in a book. Because there are things that are really great that are miserable to read. They're drudgery. This is not. This is breezy and fun. Or to listen to in audiobook form.
Listen, if Stephen Fry reads it, it's going to be fucking hilarious.
I need to actually listen to Stephen Fry because I'd go gay for him.
All right. Is Harry a bitch?
It's a good question. You know what? I kind of wish we had saved this for later in the series because he becomes... a fucking uber whiny bitch in book five. And
book five. What happens in book five again?
Book five. Oh, that's he starts going into that like, man, you don't know what it's like to be me kind of phase. Now, granted, he is in a bit of a unique situation, but he's so ungracious in book five, and he refuses to play the game with the prick teacher. In this book, no, I think he's actually very much not a bitch. He is brave. He's extremely loyal to his friends. He is willing to sacrifice or put himself on the line to help others. Now, he kind of jumps in often throughout the series when it's not necessary or sooner than it's probably necessary, like that cooler heads might have prevailed. He has a very strong sense of right and wrong that we as the reader are led to believe is the correct sense of right and wrong. I don't think he's a bitch at all.
Yet.
And he had a raw deal. Like, he lived under the fucking stairs.
You know, according to, like, chapter one of the book, the reason why Harry Potter wasn't just given to a magical family to raise from a, you know, age of one was that he would be too important. He would be too much of a celebrity, even as a young child. And that Dumbledore thought he would have a more normal existence just living with a regular family. Whereas in real life, that was child abuse, you know, living under the, you know, all the things that he went through and all the stuff, you know, whatever the Dursley's kid was named. I forget his name.
Dudley.
Well, all the things that Dudley got, you know, and being a total asshole and getting beaten up. Whereas Harry would like get beat up at school and all these terrible things. That's like child abuse. That would be traumatic. You would think that Harry Potter would be a total asshole the entire time. Well, if anyone really went through all
those redacted chapters where he just smoked meth behind a dumpster,
just to deal with his problems,
did sexual favors on truckers.
All right, well, thank you for joining us on Drunk Guys Book Club. Join us next time when we read
Mice and Men.
So tell us what you thought on Twitter at Drunk Guys BC.
Or send us an email at drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.